Part 8, 112 Men. These were 112 of Custer's men. 112 men Custer had ordered to charge the huge Sioux and Cheyenne village on the Little Bighorn River, an encampment white man runs him called the biggest Indian camp I have ever seen. From the intelligence he had received before the battle, Custer knew that Reno and his men were outnumbered by at least 10-1, and possibly by as much as 15-1. Without the support he had promised them, Custer knew these men were on a suicide mission. White Man Runs Him, Standing Bear, Horned Horse, and Mrs. Spotted Hornbull all agreed that Custer allowed what seemed like a long interval of time to pass between Reno's charge and his own attack on the village, possible evidence of Custer's ruthless glory-seeking, or perhaps simply his inability to find a suitable place to cross the river. By the time Custer led the charge down Medicine Tail Coulee, the time for waiting was over. The battle was raging, and Custer knew from his scouts that Reno's men were literally getting annihilated. He had asked these 112 men to bleed for him. Now they were bleeding, and they badly needed the support he had promised them. At this point, it was imperative for Custer to immediately support his men, either by diversionary attack or direct reinforcement. As every observer, Frederick Benteen, Marcus Reno, William Edgerly, William Slaper, the findings of the Marcus Reno Court of Inquiry, etc., agreed, Custer said he would. Custer's number two in command, Marcus Reno, recalled how he received his orders from Custer just before the beginning of the battle. "I was given the command of companies M, A, and G," Reno said, "and was ordered by General Custer to proceed at as rapid a gait as I thought prudent, and afterward to charge, and that I would be supported by the whole outfit. This order was brought to me by Colonel Cook, adjutant of the regiment. After Colonel Cook gave me these instructions, he rode with me for some time, as also Captain Keogh, and said, in his laughing, smiling way, 'We are all going with the advance, and Miles Keogh is coming too.' Instead, Keogh's body was found where he fell during the retreat from Medicine Tail Coulee, in a heap with the corpses of nearly 40 of his men, while Cook fell further up the hill, where Cheyenne lawyer Wooden Leg scalped one of his long mutton chop whiskers." So what happened? Custer's attack at Medicine Tail Coulee was the sort of battlefield moment that Custer lived for, when everything was on the line and there was great glory there to be won. Why didn't Custer continue his attack at Medicine Tail Coulee when he had the element of surprise and a virtually undefended ford in front of him? Or alternately, why didn't Custer maneuver to join forces with Reno and directly reinforce his beleaguered command when Custer knew from four of his scouts that Reno and his men were in big trouble? This is the central enigma of the Battle of the Little Bighorn. Why did Custer apparently freeze at the crucial moment in the battle? Did Custer lose his nerve? Or perhaps his mind? The eyewitness account of Billy Jackson, as told by James Watson to Peter Thompson, suggests that Custer may have possibly lost it at the end, but there is no hint of cowardice in the eyewitness record of Custer.